Live from the Liquor Barn Studios, it's time for the V Show, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Bobby V.
You know, I'm all for celebrating. I really am. By the way, sorry, we had it when the weather's like this, our connections get wonky. So I was connected beautifully, right at straight up at noon, and then by 12:04, all hell had done broke loose, and we had to redo everything all over again. So I apologize, but we're here. I'm glad to be here. You know, he won an NBA championship. I understand that. And then he got pushed out as the coach of the Raptors. Now he's coaching the Sixers, and they had a lot of injury issues. But I heard somewhere it's Nurse Week, and I don't understand why we have to dedicate a whole week to Nick Nurse. That seems very strange to me. So I just didn't I didn't quite understand that celebration. I mean, maybe
we're talking about actual nurses. Medical nurses.
Oh, you mean like your sister-in-law?
Yeah, like my sister-in-law, or like Charity Rummage, you know, like, you know, people that take care of other people.
All right, never mind then. Damn, that goes my first 20-minute rant. Yeah, it's Happy Nurse Week, you nurses out there. God bless you all. You're doing God's work. Fantastic. So, very good indeed. Here's our topics today. We start, as always, with a transfer portal update. Risking running the wrath of BBN, which is always a daunting task unless you're very thick-skinned, and I'm not particularly thick-skinned. So I tread carefully here, but the fact of the matter is, it's making me laugh now that Cal has taken a lot of players with him from Kentucky. It was kind of like goodbye and good riddance to Cal. Hooray for Mark Pope, because he's getting all these players. And right, I mean, yay. But now Cal's getting some, you know, players that were here and want to transfer, and he's got a lot of folks that are making think he's not going to be terrible in his first year in Arkansas, to put it mildly. And so they're doing everything they can, a certain element of the fan base, to denigrate him getting those guys. It just makes me laugh. Like, why? You do realize there are no games decided in the month of May. It's just he's getting his team together. Kentucky's getting their team together. Louisville's getting their team together. Indiana's getting their team together. We'll find out once they start practice and roll the balls out. We'll see who's good. But I mean, I'm not even going to go through them all on X, but it's hilarious to me how they're just, people try to make themselves. I really understand it now. When you're a fan, you do one of two things, I think. I'm understanding it now. It's taken me to the seventh decade on the earth to really understand it. You have one of two approaches. You either are always assuming the worst, just waiting for the other shoe to fall, no matter how things go, how bad it's going to look bad, or you try and calm yourself by kind of just coming up with a narrative that doesn't really matter whether it's, you know, aligns with reality or not. It's just, at least it calms your nerves. And so right now, you know, Cal's putting good players together. It looks like Arkansas, there are some people that might actually have a better team than Kentucky this year. And so they're already starting to know. Well, no, he only got the not good players. Our best players aren't going. And look who we got coming in and trying to, and you don't know. Maybe they will. Maybe Kentucky will beat her by 30. I don't know. But you don't know. But there's that element in the fan base. Then there's the other element that is, or, you know, assuming the worst. I ran into one of those fans yesterday. I don't know why. You know, I'm sorry. I was sorry to see Cal go. I'm sorry. I know I'm in the minority, but I mean, he was always bringing good players in. And I'm so there was that. And then there's always the one. There's me. It's the guy who's trying to be the voice of reason. And I read one. I went through a string of maybe 30 tweets, and it was one guy who said, "Yeah, maybe they'll be better. Hey, look, guys, their roster's better than ours right now. That's the way it is. But we'll be fine." And that was like, yeah, you know, Mark Pope looks like a good choice. He's working his brains out. He's winning friends and influencing people. Who was that guy who wrote that book? Winning Friends and Influencing People. Who was that? Oh, man, he's one of the great business motivating guys. Somebody is going to remember that. Winning Friends and Influencing Ziegler? People. No, I don't think so. I thought it was another guy. He's in that vein, though. He was like before Zig Ziglar. Let me see.
Winning Friends, Influencing People.
Dale Carnegie. That's my guy. There we go. You never heard of Dale Carnegie?
I've heard of the Carnegies, like Carnegie Hall and stuff. Is he related to them?
Once again, generational gap.
Sorry.
Dale Carnegie was Zig Ziglar before Zig Ziglar.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
How to Win Friends and Influence People is a 1936 self-help book written by Dale Carnegie.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very good. All right. Getting wonky here again. Weather gets freaky outside. These controls lose their mind. You hearing me okay?
Yeah, no, you sound fine to me. I just don't know if you can hear me.
Well, you should have seen the little, you know, it's if you do the show like this, you're in the studio, he's got the big control board, there's a bunch of levels, and there's those little needle things that go back and forth, and you can see what your levels are and blah, blah, blah. When you do it on a phone, there's like two little gauges, like idiot lights on a car. And they kind of go back and forth. And the one for me speaking to you right now is not even hardly moving. So I don't understand how that's working. But all right. Well, as long as you can hear me, it's all I care about.
Yeah. No, so. Good. Got good levels. Everything's fine. By the way, yeah. Danny Manning is going to Colorado.
For vacation? To ski? Or
I believe he's the new assistant coach out there.
Oh, good for Danny. Danny's good people. And the people here. I'm so sorry. I got to get up in the morning and sing for a half hour before I come on the air. I think maybe then my voice will not be inflicted with these Ohio Valley crud, which just seemingly affects everybody. But the people were so mad at the staff last year. I don't think they thought anybody did anything. But Danny, you know, Jay Billis told me that his son played for Danny at Wake Forest. That he knows what he's doing. He's son of a coach. He does a good job. But they didn't translate to the cards, to say the least. But he's a good person, and I'm happy for him. So I see him all the time at King's Donut on 42 in Prospect, because he lives not very far from there, nor do I. So we run into each other and enjoy a donut together. So
nice.
There you go.
I didn't know he was a King's Donut fan.
Oh yeah, no, he's
good
in there all the time. No, very good choice. All right, let's get the latest. We got topics today, including a bizarre story. Have you looked up the story? Because I sent it to you. Did you see the story in Massachusetts I was alluding to?
No, what's this thing about a bear?
Well, all right, I don't want to start with that. We'll come back to that. It's gory and bizarre, but it's also, and I, you know, you got to find humor in even tragedy. And the humor is not in the incident itself; it's in the people who did the reporting of it. And I'll tell you about that in a minute. But let's get to Portal News, shall we? I don't think there's anything new from what we mentioned on yesterday's show. I don't think. Did we mention that Kiba Keita, the Utah player, is going to Brigham Young? I don't know if we mentioned that
yesterday.
I'm not
sure we mentioned that. I do know Great Osabor is taking, I believe, his last official visit today through Thursday at Washington, where his former coach, Danny Sprinkle, is.
Well, that's just good. Why go to Washington? Just the whole state just, you know, smoking doob and constantly in the state having a buzz. Do you really want to play?
Say you're doing a good job selling it so far.
I was going to say, you may say, that's exactly where I want to be. There's some good players still out there. It's amazing. Some good players still out there. I'm not going to go through them all, but you know, I'm looking at the list right now, and there's still some good ones. So we'll see where it goes from here. In terms of local, I don't think there's any news other than the young man you were just talking about. He visited already, right? He visited.
Great Osabor visited over the weekend. Yes,
visited Louisville over the weekend, right? So
yes.
So the people just crossed their fingers. The bad news is, the original thought was he's going to Washington and, you know, following his coach, which a lot of guys are doing. Cal brought a bunch, and that's fine. You know, not only is it fine, I don't have a problem with it at all, because they used to make that really hard to do. Because, in fact, it was like something that was, there were like sanctions if you did it. And it's ridiculous, because kids largely pick a school because of the coach. I mean, what do you think they're picking? Because that you should have seen, Dad, that place had 150,000 volumes in their library. You know, this place only has 90. I'm going there. What are you kidding? I mean, they go largely because of the coach. And so when the coach left, You know, I had a kid when I took the Bellarmine job from St. Mary's that, you know, really wanted to come with me here. And for a year, I didn't contact him. I didn't take him. And then he came, went back to St. Mary's and said, I really want to go. And so they let him out. And he came here, played here for a year for us, was a nice player. And, you know, but it was hard. I mean, at the beginning, it was like, they were like, are you sure we're not going to get, we'll go to the NCAA if we're tampering. And I was like, you know, it's just, now it's the reality. Kids want to go with their coach, so let them go. So Louisville, nothing new on the front there, other than we'll see if they get a commitment. I guess the visit goes through the weekend. Is that what you were telling me?
It goes through 7th through the 9th.
Okay, but when is the 9th?
That's, the 9th is what? Friday. Thursday.
Thursday. Oh, so maybe you'll have a decision by the weekend. All right, so that's good. Let's see. And did Kentucky get another commitment or not? I thought they might have. No,
I'm not sure. Let me see if I can find that real fast.
Let's see. We did Butler. We did Brea. We did Carr. We did Carissa. How does he say his name, by the way, the two I's? Carissa? I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Williams. Garrison. No, they got so we're up to date there, too. But, you know, continues to be that Indiana, I think, is still at the top of the portal rankings.
We did mention Adufiero going to Arkansas, right?
Yep, following his coach to Arkansas. So I think Indiana is still top of the table, if I'm not mistaken. Nope. But now Arkansas has moved to number one. So Cal, who was in the top of the table when it came to recruiting, that's why there's the resentment. Now I get it. The resentment from the UK base all of a sudden, because he was kind of benign for a while. He was over there, not much was happening, but now, you know, he and Duke had dominated the high school recruiting picture for years. Now he's getting in the portal game, so they're not pleased about that. So they're number one, Arkansas number one right now, Indiana number two, Kansas three, West Virginia. That's impressive, rising from the ashes to go to number four. Kentucky's number five. Alabama's number six. Michigan number seven. UCLA eight. Memphis nine. Missouri 10. Now, Louisville was up there for a while. Let's see where they are. I'll go through the top 25 for you if you're interested. Ole Miss is 11. The Ohio State University is 12. Illinois is 13. Texas is 14. What is that? That's USC is 15. Baylor 16. St. John's is 17. NC State is 18. Louisville's 19. Louisville is doing it by volume. They have 8 commits already, and they ain't done. And they can't be done. The next closest is Mark Pope. He's got 7. Kentucky's got 7. Louisville's got 8. And most other teams don't have more than 4 or 5. A lot with 3. So Duke's got 2. Duke is 42nd there. It's going to be an interesting year next year. I don't think there's any question about that. We will see. Like the Champions Classic has the two. I think the matchup is the Young Bucks against the established ones. I mean, it's Bill Self and Tom Izzo, and I think they are not matched up with each other. So I think they'll be matched up with John Chire, who's in what, his third year, I guess, third or fourth,
Mark
Pope. Yeah, and Mark Pope, who's the new kid, the newbie, although he's not a newbie. He's been a head coach for a number of years and done a very good job. Right, here's the story of the bear, if you've not heard this, which is, like I said, it sounds tragic, and it is tragic. I mean, the story itself is tragic, but it is also the most ridiculous writing I've ever seen in a guy. Why do people write these kinds of things? Here's the story. Let me see if I can find the one I want, because the one I want is written so preposterously. Let me see if I can find how they wrote it. Let's go see here. Let me give you what happened. There was a car crash in Western Massachusetts. Evidently, it was just this past weekend. I think it was. It was. It was Sunday, and it was a one car accident. And the guy was killed. I mean, it was a fatal accident. I really want to find the one writing, because it's just, it's astounding to me that somebody would write this. Evidently, the car was careening and it hit the guardrail. Like I said, one car accident. He lost control, hit the guardrail, hit it again. Then it careened to the other side of the road, hit a number of trees, and he was dead. Excuse me, 31-year-old man. Route 91, if you care about any such things. No one else was in the car. Now, what transpired after that is they found his body a long way away from the car. And they have suggested now, because people who went to investigate the accident saw a bear nearby. And evidently the bear, seeing the body, dragged the body out away from the car and dragged it into the woods. The guy didn't get thrown that far away into the woods. The bear
dragged him.
Bears eat people, right? Nothing?
They eat anything.
Yeah. So the bear said, here's lunch, and dragged him into the woods. Okay. So, I mean, it's tragic, right? Bad enough if you have a car accident, then you got a bear debasing your body, dragging him into the woods. Okay. So, I mean, it's a terrible story. All right. I know you get mad sometimes on the show here if you feel like I'm lecturing you, and I get it. Nobody wants to be lectured to, but especially about stupid stuff. Like I mentioned on yesterday's show, I hate at the end of drug commercials when they say, you know, let's say the drug is called Popovich. You know, Popovich will relieve your allergy symptoms, and then don't take Popovich if you're allergic to Popovich. Well, no, really? You need me to tell you that? I thought if I'm allergic to it, it makes me blow up like a balloon or
sort
get
of like a
rash.
Sort of like a double negative if I, you know, take it. It'll equal a positive.
I mean, it seems like I would not need someone to tell me that. I mean, do we have to put that on every single? I guess we do now.
Yeah, because
every single
get
thing
sued.
We use, like, you know, you buy a knife. Do not slice your fingers off with this knife. Oh, really? God dang it. I was going to go make myself a nice brisket and then slice off a digit or two. I mean, that sounds like a nice night at home. So this article says, a reminder to motorists, all right, so far, so good, that bears are attracted to, you know, they're like a lot of animals, they're scent-driven, and if they smell a person, or, you know, in this case, a corpse, they are going to be attracted to it. So they said, you know, be careful, okay? And they said, if you see bears, I guess Massachusetts has bears, I didn't know that. If you see bears, you know, tell authorities so they can be alerted to where they are and kind of just keep an eye and make motors. But then this was the other thing. Also a reminder to motorists to drive their cars carefully, not to drive with recklessly and put themselves in harm's way by... And I was like, really? Thank God I saw that, because I was going to come into the studio today. I remember telling Darlene last night, honey, tomorrow I'm going to work. I'm driving all the way there on the sidewalk. And then I'm going to come home the same way, but in reverse. And then she said, no, look at this article. These people in Massachusetts say you should drive the car carefully. Really? Oh, my goodness. Thank you for writing that. I didn't realize that. Because if not, there's a good chance I'm going to get eaten by a bear. I mean, why would you write that? Did they just need, they have column space to fill? You don't even write newspapers anymore. It's on the internet. You can write whatever length you want. I was just so astounded at that. I mean, it's a tragic story. I'm not making light of the guy getting killed and then how about that poor family who has to go in the body? Who knows? I'm sure the bear mauled it until the people came to investigate the accident and chased him away. You know, do you really need a warning that authorities remind motorists to drive their cars with care?
I don't know. Maybe they're using it as a PSA. They're like, hey, we got the story. I mean, we can fill a little bit of space and maybe do a nice, you know, PSA to remind people that don't drive your car like a jerk because you could die and a bear could maul your body.
If there are carnivores in the area, it's a good idea to not, like, for example, you know, it'd be like finding out about a shark attack. And then you say, okay, right, like you tell people, you warn people there are bears in this area. You know, if you see them, alert authorities, okay. Well, if you're swimming in certain parts of, especially like down in Australia, and they might say, you know, be aware there's sharks in the area. Swimmers are advised not to go into the ocean hemorrhaging. You know, it's not a good idea to be spouting blood out of arteries. And, I mean, really? Thank God. I had bypass surgery. I was going to hop right in there. I wasn't even going to wait for him to stitch me up. I was just going to hop right in there. And it's just unbelievable. It really is rather amazing.
Just a reminder, gory death may attract bears or other predators.
Yes. If you're barely hanging on to consciousness because you're bleeding profusely, you might want to stay away from the water on that day. Really? Thank God. Oh, what a great public service announcement. I couldn't find it. Now, when I did the search, I can't find the original one I wanted, because if I'd read it to you, it's even more stupid, because the exact wording would just be very stupid. So, by the way, I know it's going to sound like, left-leaning Bobby, but this is why I hate politics. There's exaggeration, and then there's basically lying. This woman has risen to the level of governor. That's a pretty important position. And she writes a book where she describes meeting North Korea's Kim Jong-un. She's never, ever met the man. It's just, what? I don't know how you live with yourself. I guess maybe you say it's a means to an end. Like, you know, I somehow parlayed this into being the... Like Josh Hurd takes another job, and I parlayed it into... becoming the athletic director at U of L because of my many counseling sessions that I had with Bear Bryant and who I never met, and just making.
Maybe she got mistaken with another Kim. She met Kim Cattrall. Star of Sex and the City and Porky's.
Well, it's amazing. Amazingly. It's a sad state of affairs in the world. It's just a sad state of affairs in the world. Somebody's going to send me a Democrat who lied. I get it. I don't know. Like I said, stretching the truth, not a fan of, but I understand it. Completely making crap up. Wow. This is the woman who shot her, well, I guess posted about shooting her dog or something.
Yeah, that was weird too.
Yeah, so that's strange.
That was objectively weird.
Yeah, that's very strange.
Like, so, I They're right leaning, but it was funny. I'm sorry. The Babylon Bee had a story that she showed up in Derby with, looking to see if any of the courses needed to be put down. That's such a dark headline, but that's really funny. And kudos to them making fun of their own. That was good. That was really good. Babylon Bee is a good follow.
We did the Minaj yesterday, and we left out a story that should have been mentioned because it was.
Oh, we got Sully today at 12:40 and Neil Knuckles Greenberg at 1:40. By the way,
okay. I don't know if you saw this, I don't know, but these are guys going for their first tour win.
Okay,
and
breaking
so it was
their
very
maiden.
Dramatic. Yeah, and that's a big deal on the PGA Tour. I mean, there's so much stuff that comes with a tour win. You get invites to the Masters. You get invites to a number of other tournaments. You get exempted for a number of years on the tour. Not to mention, you become an overnight millionaire. Well, they're playing down in Texas at the Byron Nelson, and a guy is playing his ever-loving butt off. Ben Coles has just been playing his brains out. Taylor Pendrith had a great tournament, but it's one of those great dramatic golf events. If you watch golf, this is what makes it fun as a spectator when you watch guys coming down the stretch. Coles made a birdie on number 16 and number 17, and gave himself a one shot lead going into the last hole. I mean, he came from way back, and well, not way back, but he came from behind. He was like a little bit like Mystic Dan, and took the lead. And Taylor Pendrith, neither of these guys have ever won on the tour before. So Coles comes to the 18th hole, and you have to understand the way the course is set up. The 18th hole is a par 5 that is designed to create drama, because largely the whole field, it's almost like a glorified par 4, basically. So everybody, let me put it to you this way. Nobody had made a bogey on the hole the entire day. So the worst score of the entire field because this was like the next to last group. The worst score for the entire field the whole day had been a 5, which is a par. But as I said, it's designed so you can go for the green in 2. You get a chance for eagle. So you're going to get a real dramatic swing late if a guy makes an eagle and the other guy makes a par. It's a 2-stroke swing. And you will see some pars there, but you're not going to see very much worse than that. It's mostly birdies and then a smattering of eagles thrown in there. Well, Coles, who comes to the 18th hole now with a 1-stroke lead, Pendrith is behind him, goes for the green like everybody does. It's not hard to reach into, and hits it just off the green into the rough. And then he does what all amateur golfers can relate to. He hits it and doesn't get it out of the rough, doesn't barely move.
Oh, that old chestnut. Love that.
So then he hits his next one onto the green and misses the putt, and so he makes a 6. He's the only guy in the entire field to make a 6 the entire day. And so then Pendrith comes up, and he thought he would need an eagle, but he does. He gets it on the green, long way away. And so he, you know, when he teed off, he thought he needed an eagle, and he gets on the green. Now he realizes he only needs a birdie, and he makes a 2-putt birdie and wins the tournament because Coles had an absolute meltdown. I mean, just the absolute hackiest, dufferiest play on the last hole, and took him. To finish a stroke back. And he's 34 years old. He's never won in 68 starts. He was the only player to bogey the 18th hole on Sunday.
Poor guy.
Yeah, that's what I only learned about it because Mike Greenberg tweeted it. He said, anybody who plays golf, and I have name dropping here with that guy who hates when I do that. I've played golf with Mike Greenberg. So he's anybody who plays golf can relate to the poor Cole's last hole travails.
You're having a good round.
You
got a chance to break, put in, you know, put in a number, and yeah, you just choke it away at the end.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, even a kind of mediocre chip, you know, just to get it on the green, these guys putt so well, he's probably going to 2-putt and make par, and then he at least would have gotten into a playoff. But Pendrith made it the 3-footer for birdie. And he gets his first win. So, I mean, they ask him, how you feel? And he said, well, I feel for him. He said, we've all been through that. But the guy just got his first tour win, too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so unbelievable. Now,
is that a definition of a choke, though? I mean, it was a collapse. He collapsed.
I hate to say it, but I think that's definitely a choke. Because a collapse is like what Greg Norman did when he had that gigantic lead going into the last round of the Masters and shot like a 74. And Nick Faldo shot, I think, a 67. Made up six shots on him, or 7 shots, whatever it was, and won. This was one shot. He didn't collapse. He birdied 16, birdied 17. Those are not birdie holes as much as 18 is. And then he's got a greenside chip, but it's rough, and you tense up, and you stub it, and he left it in the rough. And then he had his next chip with his feet in the bunker. He had to stand with his feet in the bunker. That was actually maybe arguably a harder chip. And he got that on the green and then missed the putt. And so he made a 6. So, yeah, I hate to say it. I'm always hesitant because people say anytime somebody doesn't win that they expect to win, oh, he choked. And I told you, I don't think that's...
Yeah, choking is being, you know, clever at the expense of being smart, not trusting your stuff, and letting the enormity of the moment overwhelm you.
Don't you think that kind of sums it up there? Because he was he was playing great. He's in a situation, he knows if he chips this close and makes a birdie, he's probably going to win. I mean, the other guy, if he makes a birdie there, the other guy would have to make an eagle just to tie him. So,
that is one thing that really, separates, you know, every sport has some je ne sais quoi that makes it extra challenging. Whether it be physicality, toughness, mental toughness, but the mental toughness of golf, I can't imagine that. We've all been out there. You're having a decent round, and then all of a sudden the wheels fall off, and you're out there with your buddies, maybe having a beer and a cigar, and you get the yips or something like that. I don't understand how these guys, because that's like the major difference. Like, they stop the bleeding, they might give up a stroke. They don't give up 3 holes. Like,
oh, no,
that's...
They have wheels come off for them.
Oh, no, it does. But I'm saying, far more often than not, they're able to, you know, make an adjustment and at least limit it. Or their wheels falling off is, yeah, they might have back-to-back bogeys. But whereas, you know, Joe Everyman will have a triple, a double, a triple. You know, he throws his wedge into the water, you know, something along those lines.
Well, look at who's the kid last night for the Pacers now. Is it Siakam? He can't make a free throw.
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden, it's in his head. He can't make a free throw.
Yeah, he's hovering around Yips territory.
Yeah, I mean, it's unbelievable. So I got some thoughts on that, too. And how about I warned you all about the Wolves, did I? Told you. I mean, they took the defending NBA champions in Denver to the woodshed last night. Just absolutely spanked them. Beat them by, what, 26, I guess.
26, yeah, 106-80, I think.
And now they're up 2-0, and they haven't played a home game yet. So the Wolves looking mighty, mighty good. You know, Cat and Edwards, those guys, they got a squad, told you. I think they got a squad, all right. So keep an eye on them. Got some thoughts on the Knicks as well. In fact, real quick thought on that. The people making a big deal because I understand that DiVincenzo sold, if you didn't see the play, they set a ball screen on him late. Knicks had a lead, and they were coming down, the Pacers were coming down, and they were trying to take him off a ball screen, and they would have had a chance for a game-winning shot. And instead, the guy set an illegal screen, and it was the thing is,
Miles
it was definitely... I'm sorry?
It was Miles Turner, I believe, who set the screen.
Yeah, it was Turner. Turner set an illegal screen. But if you watch the replay, it's definitely an illegal screen. And I know I'm in the minority to some degree. Because you know, I see let the players decide the game, but players do decide the game. I look at it the other way. If they let him get away with that, then I'll be honest with you. I am definitely in the minority here. That last shot by Michael Jordan, where he beats Utah, that should have been an offensive foul. I mean, he drives, he hits the brakes, and then he takes this offhand and he shoves the defender out of the way. I mean, go watch that, the game-winning shot. He pushes him out of the way and gives himself room, and it's the game winner. If you are gaining an advantage, that's the very definition of calling a foul. So, I mean, the definition of why you should call a foul. And in this case, if he doesn't call that foul and Indiana gets a wide-open look, I have a problem with that. You got to call the damn game, especially if an advantage is gained. Now, if there's a hard collision and there's no real advantage gained, especially in that situation, okay, you can let something go. But, I mean, he definitely moves. Now, DiVincenzo gambles because he sells it, but he goes flopping to the floor. But he definitely, no doubt he moves. It's obvious. I mean, and the people who are complaining, well, if it was the 1980s, well, they would have let that go. Maybe they would have. Doesn't mean it was right, you know. In the 1920s, you know, they were shooting up the streets of Chicago. Doesn't mean it was right. I mean, it's just just because it happened doesn't mean it was right. I'm sorry. I know, well, you're a Knicks fan. Sure, but I really feel that way. I love Michael Jordan, but that was crazy. Well, if you go watch that last play it's against Utah, right, isn't it? He dribbles to the middle and shoves the guy out of the way. That's a guy knowing his place in the league. They're not going to call out on me. No, you were right. They didn't, but they should have. And that's the official's job, man. Sorry. And so I don't have a problem with that call late at all. The Knicks are the thrill show of the NBA right now. They don't play a boring game. They just every game they play is drama.
Brunson's amazing. Four straight games with 40.
So is Hart. Hart is just that. The kid never comes out. Plays 48 minutes. Goes for every rebound. Goes coast to coast. Defends his butt off. That kid's amazing. I may try and call Jay Wright. Jay coached those kids, right? He hadn't left yet.
Yeah, no, that was his team.
So I would like to ask him about that. We got to see if we can find Jay Wright. I'm sure a lot of people are doing it, but I'd like to do that because, you know, sometimes you know guys are special. You know, I mean, listen, a guy who wins a national championship is special. There's no question about that, if you're capable of doing that. But did you know they were going to be – these kids are stars in the NBA. And Brunson, as you said, especially, another 40-point game. It's ridiculous. He's scoring like Wilt Chamberlain. He's a bulldog.
Last one to do 40 points in four games, I believe, was Michael Jordan.
Yeah, the list – you see the guys who've done it? They're all like – it's like Jerry, it's the logo, Jerry West, and it's Jordan, and it's just – it's the greatest players of all time he's putting his name up there with. So says something, that's for sure. All right, we'll come back and we'll talk a little derby and the aftermath. And Tim Sullivan joins us here on the other side, ESPN 680.
Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience, too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
More V-Show with Bob Valvano is now, right here, on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
This is one of the great openings to any piece of music of all time. That clarinet open to Rhapsody in Blue, and that's the walk-up music for our guest, Tim Sullivan, who joins us right now. Sully, thanks for being with us. Always good to catch up with you. Let me get a couple of parting comments on Derby 150, if I may, because I don't want to make it sound even more contentious than it was, but it was definitely, it still is a contentious matchup between the track and the Churchill Downs and Bob Baffert. But as my colleague Drew Diener pointed out on his show, how much of it is vindication that as big a deal as he is, and everybody who follows horse racing admits the game's better when he's in it. He's been great. He's been a great trainer. He's a great personality. Record-setting betting at the track, record-setting betting on TwinSpires.com, just bigger and better than ever in many ways. That as big as he is, nobody is bigger than the sport, even if the sport is perceived to be in a bit of a trauma right now. So how significant is that in your mind in that narrative of the Bob Baffert story?
Well, you know, the thing about the Derby that strikes me every time I go is how little of it is really about horse racing. You know, it's about the fashions. It's about the party. It's about $22 mint juleps and, you know, an enormous crowd. I think that for the hardcore horse players, for the people who run the sport, the Baffert versus Churchill Downs drama, you know, is significant. But for 100-some thousand people, it's a blip, and you know, I think we're reminded of that every May, and we'll continue to be, you know, whether Baffert is back next year or not.
It's, you know, that's fair to say that the Derby is kind of its own little category, and so it's going on, and they're spending all this money because, you know, there's reason to do that. They've got the first turn, and because there's that, people come from all over the world for this week, or at least weekend. But is it any reflection at all of interest in the sport? In other words, do you take anything away from the immense popularity of this Derby and think, all right, well, the sport's figuring it out a little bit, or there's nothing of significance in that regard?
I think the Derby is an outlier. You know, I remember looking at some attendance figures for major prep races, might have been last year, and it seemed to me that Thurby had outdrawn two of the primary races. It might have been the Santa Anita Derby and the Florida Derby. And, you know, Thurby is basically a marketing idea. It's not a huge day in terms of stakes races or significance in terms of the sport. It's a party, and that whole weekend is a party. And I don't know that you can extrapolate what happened at Churchill Downs over the weekend with what's going on in the sport. In fact, if you look at the trend lines for tracks being closed, foal crops diminishing, et cetera, all the signs point to contraction, but Churchill Downs continues to expand. I mean, they continue to throw hundreds of millions of dollars to renovate and to expand their physical plant. Whether they believe in the future of the sport or not, the people at in that company certainly believe that they have a unique attraction that fuels their entire business based on essentially a 48-hour period that they've tried to expand to 72, 96 hours with, you know, additional features like Thurby. But I wouldn't read too much into what happened at Churchill Downs as far as the sport in general is concerned, because I think there are still profound problems. And there was a story in the LA Times pretty recently that described the issues at Santa Anita, which is maybe the most beautiful track in America, probably the most beautiful track. And yet they continue to lose money there on a physical plant that is, you know, could be redeveloped probably over $1 billion in real estate. And at some point that's going to be a front burner issue for the sport, because it has tremendous ripples. If California Racing collapses, that's an enormous market for Kentucky Thoroughbreds and for the sport in general. So John Churva from the LA Times, I think, really wonders openly whether there will be racing as we know it in California in 5 years. And and I think that's what's going on everywhere. Gulfstream is very similar, I think, and great real estate and a track that is probably too expensive to maintain.
Moving on, talking to Tim Sullivan here, one last comment about the racing and then move on to something else. Chad Brown talking about his horse, Sierra Leone. He's good, but he's not going to the Preakness. I'm going to take him to Saratoga tomorrow. He said this a couple days ago, and he's going to train there for the Belmont. He's a little tired. Kenny McPeak said, "We're not committing to the Preakness. When I ran him back in 2 weeks last November, it completely backfired. We skipped the Rebel because it was too short as well. So we'll watch him over the next week and probably decide then. It will be a last-minute decision. We'll let him tell us." Okay, so having said all that, there's a couple of thoughts here. Number one, how much of a reluctance do you think, let's play conspiracy theory, is, you know, these horses increase their value by what they do in the Triple Crown races. The big boys bringing out his guns in Baltimore. Bob Baffert will have his horses there. You think there's some hesitation because of that?
No, I think that there's just a trend in the industry that's become more pronounced in recent years, that you don't bring horses back 2 weeks after they've run. It happens, but it's happening with less and less frequency. If you look back and how often Seabiscuit ran, or horses from that era, it would not be uncommon for them to run 3 times in a month. But anymore, they are spaced out. They're treated as much more fragile items than they were in those days. And to some extent, there's a strong belief in the industry that they've been bred to be more fragile, that the emphasis on top-end speed has replaced stamina and endurance for the purpose of selling horses down the road. I'm not expert enough to know the science behind that and whether that thesis holds up, but it's pretty clear that most of the top trainers will skip the Preakness unless they've won the Derby. I mean, Todd Pletcher is virtually invisible in Baltimore and is a very prominent trainer here in Louisville and in New York. But, I don't think it's fear of Baffert that's affecting the field so much as just the idea of picking another day and another battle when the Triple Crown is no longer a possibility for your horse.
I know that, it's a test of champions, but they rarely run a mile and a quarter anymore, let alone a mile and a half, which they never run in the Belmont. But this year, they're going to run the Belmont at a mile and a quarter because Belmont's undergoing a massive reconstruction. The racetrack, it'll take 2 years, so they're moving it to Saratoga, and it'll be a mile and a quarter. So therefore, it's not so sacrosanct that you can't change things. Why don't they just consider changing the damn calendar? Why don't they spread the races out by 5 weeks so that you'd have like the I'll say this about the PGA Tour, for all their bungling of what went on with the LIV Tour, I think they've got the major championship calendar right, where now they have the Masters in April, the PGA in May, the U.S. Open in June, the British Open in July. Then you've got the Ryder Cup and playoffs that exist such as they are in golf. You got a nice calendar there. Nobody races that. Whether you think it makes a difference or not is irrelevant. The trainers do, and so they don't race this close together. Why not have people talking about it and have a big stakes race, a big Triple Crown race once a month? Have the Derby in May, and then the Preakness in either very, very late May or early June, and then the Belmont you can run run it 4th of July weekend. I mean, I don't understand what the big hang-up is about changing calendar dates. If you're willing to change the damn distance of the last race, you certainly can change the calendar.
Well, I don't think there's any question that is on a lot of minds. And, I remember probably 10 years ago covering the Preakness, and they were openly talking about trying to change the date and move it to make better race. And I think that's the story that gets lost a lot of times in these discussions. People talk about the tradition of the 5 week window of the Triple Crown. Well, the way things stand now, the Preakness is not nearly as difficult a race as it could be if all the best horses were there. If you space them differently and the trainers were more comfortable bringing them back, maybe 4 weeks or 5 weeks after the Derby, I think the Preakness would be more prestigious, more difficult, and would attract a better field and perhaps more interest. Now, to a large portion of the public, the Preakness only matters if the horse that won the Derby is in it and has a chance to go for the Triple Crown. But it's still a pretty prestigious race with significant purse, a long, long tradition, and I don't think that moving it a couple of weeks is going to disrupt that to the large segment of the sporting public. We've seen other sports change their schedule, change their playoff arrangement. When you and I were young, there were 2 8-team leagues in baseball, and now right. You've got 3 tiers of playoffs. And things expand, things change. I fail to see the argument for maintaining the Triple Crown simply because it's tradition. Well, as I don't know if this is apocryphal or if he actually said this, but somebody made a comment to Winston Churchill supposedly about the British Navy, and he said the traditions of the British Navy are rum, sodomy, and the lash. And, anyway, I'll leave it at that.
I don't think that's the tradition of the Triple Crown, but your point's well taken, so fair enough. Listen, it's great to talk to you again. We'll catch up with you next week. We'll have some talk about the PGA, which will be in town. We'll, next time we visit, we'll talk about that as we roll on here on the V-Show. Thanks to Tim Sullivan. Appreciate it, buddy. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, Tim Sullivan with us, and we'll step aside here at the top of the hour, and we'll have another couple of hours of radio work here, which is what we do. So stay with us as we roll on here. Couple of things to tell you about. We've got our friends at Shady Rays is going to give you a chance, and I hope you'll very much consider this. They have been so generous. There's a couple of spots, a couple of teams. They've given us a sponsorship, but said, you know, let your listeners get in on the fun. If you'd like to be part of our event on Sunday, and it's Mother's Day, I know, but there's still plenty of time to go to brunch or go to dinner afterwards. If you got, but don't, please don't say you'll come and then don't come because we've set up a schedule and everything. If you're interested, I'm going to tell you how you can play for free. It's normally $800 a team. Everybody gets a pair of Shady Rays glasses, by the way. They're one of our sponsors. And we'll be playing on the pitch at Lynn Family Stadium. You don't get chance to do that unless you're breaking the law or you're in our event. So you can play. It'll be Sunday. And not only that, it's going to be great fun. If you got people in your family that like cars, they can come out. It's a big car show. There's going to be, we anticipate and hope, if the weather cooperates, between 100 and 150 cars, and you'll be able to see all of them. And then come and play in the bocce tournament, which is going to be on the field at Lynn Family Stadium. And we're going to tell you, if you have three other folks that'll come with you, even if there's only a couple, we'll try and flesh your team out. But don't enter our little contest if you win and then say, well, I'm not coming because you have to set a schedule up. This is not like golf where everybody just plays all at once. You got to set a bracket up and blah blah blah. So, but if you're interested at all, and it could be a great family day out, and it doesn't. You can have your kids can play, your mom can play, your dad can play, your brother can play. If you can breathe, you can play. And you're not going to get a chance to do this damn near anywhere else. They don't let you play on the stadium. I'll say that. So we'll tell you how you can win. Thanks to Shady Rays for the sponsorship. We're going to have two teams that you'll play, sponsored by Shady Rays. They put up the entry fee for you. So, and you can have a fabulous day. We got lunch for you. There's a car show, and there'll be a fun. And if you've never played bocce, don't sweat it. A, if you can breathe, you can play. B, my favorite story is about Louis Dampier, who is the great, great player for the University of Kentucky and the Kentucky Colonels and then the San Antonio Spurs in the NBA. He had never even heard of the game, and we invited him. We invite some local celebrities. He came and played, and he not only won it the first year, first time he ever played it, he won it again. He's one of our two-time champions. So, you know what? You can pick it up pretty quickly. Now, Louis is a pretty gifted athlete, but not a lot of running and jumping and bocce. It's just fun. It's a social game, and you can play, and it'll be a great experience. We're so excited about this. It's going to be a great event. So if you are interested, stay tuned, because we'll tell you how you can enter our contest to be one of the winners of one of the free teams. So very excited about that. So stay with us here on this Tuesday on ESPN 680 105.7.